So we're living in very strange days where there is an ever-growing sort of almost persecution against Christianity, or at least a great distaste towards the churches. And normally when we look back in history, we assume that this is where people are going to start persecuting you because you believe in Jesus. But I think what we're finding is that no one actually cares whether you believe in Jesus. That our world is quite convinced that Jesus is just an imaginary figure. And if you want to have an imaginary friend, then good for you. And so really, they don't care. But what we are finding is that if you believe in the teachings of Jesus, you will experience all the hatred of the world against you. All the violence will come up to the surface. We're already seeing this, or we've seen this for years, in terms of things like the defense for human life. We're seeing it now particularly in terms of the defense of traditional marriage. That to even say that you believe that marriage is between a man and a woman, that's now regarded as hate speech. But we're even now seeing it in terms of the Christian view towards suffering. Don't know whether you saw just yesterday, page 3 of the Week in Australian, big exclusive, kind of speaking in absolute horror at what some of the Christian catechists are teaching in schools, in the state school system, that for some reason they dare to suggest that suffering actually has meaning and that we exist for more than just earth. And this article was almost breathless in its, you know, saying, how dare they? How could you possibly suggest something and indoctrinate the poor little minds of children? And it just shocked me how our world is going. That it's quite fine if you're a Christian as long as you believe in secularism. That's almost where things are at. And really what this comes down to is really what the popes have been saying for decades. That the big battle here is actually for our understanding of what it is to be human. Because fundamentally the gospel is about what does it mean to be human. And I think this is the bit we forget sometimes. We've simplified it. We've reduced it down to believe in Jesus Christ, then you get your ticket to heaven and everything's sweet. We've missed the fact that it's actually God trying to reveal to us who we are and that is our salvation. The fact that we're lost is because we've forgotten who we are and we've forgotten our place in the world. And suffering is actually central to that mystery. You know, we've heard this throughout the readings today. If we were to come from our Western civilization perspective, or at least our current secular perspective, these readings are horrific. You know, the first reading is saying that the Lord has been pleased to crush his servant with suffering. What sort of God is that? What are we proclaiming here, that God would be prepared to crush his servant? And this is an image of Jesus we're talking about here. That makes it even worse. That the Heavenly Father would be happy to crush his own son with suffering. This is the point where people just walk away from the church. Because we cannot begin to understand what is happening here. Now, there's a grand mystery that we've got to engage with here. We can look at this question of why does God allow suffering, but I think the bigger question is, why did God choose to become human so that he could suffer? That's his answer to the question. And the fact that we never actually stop to look seriously at the cross means that we don't get the answer we're looking for. Everyone walks around angry. Just have a look on YouTube for angry atheists and you'll see hours and hours of videos of people basically saying we don't believe in God, but if he does exist, we hate him because he allows suffering. That's the beautiful logic of our world this day. But why did God choose to suffer? You know, why? I mean, this is why we have the crucifix in our church. This is why we have the crucifix in our homes, because we're basically placing before ourselves the grand mystery of humanity. That life hurts, but for some reason God has chosen to join us in that hurt. Now, If you look at the way the story of the scriptures flow, because it really is a story of humanity. In the beginning, somehow, somewhere, we sinned. We rebelled against God. But ever since that moment, it's not just God we've rebelled against, it's our own humanity. We have hated the fact that we are small and weak and powerless and that we hurt. So ever since we walked out of the Garden of Eden, we have been desperately trying to become God. It's almost like inside of us there is this burning rage, this envy that for some reason, well, somehow God doesn't suffer, but we are condemned to suffering. And so we want to exchange places. We want to become him. And so you see this as you go through the Old Testament. You have the story of the Tower of Babel, where humanity is driven mad because of their limitations, because of their weakness. And so they decide to try and band together, use all their might, unite all their intellect to try and reach the heavens, almost to try and usurp the throne, to throw God down and so that they can step in his place. You know, and again and again you see this being played out, where it's the powerful who try to rid their lives of all suffering, even if it means inflicting it upon others. Now, in our modern day, it's the same ideas. You know, go to one of the most influential philosophers of our time, Friedrich Nietzsche. His whole idea was that life hurts, so just make sure you're the most powerful person at the end of the day. Push everyone else down, and you can stand on top of the pile. That's the philosophy that inspired Hitler. You know, we in a sense, we still have our modern Tower of Babel. Only these days, it's known as the internet. You know, where everyone's trying to desperately combine all their knowledge, to combine all their power, so that we can transcend ourselves, we can overcome our weaknesses, and we can finally win. You know, we can now become all-knowing through this beautiful thing called Google. We can now become all-powerful, you know, through modern science. We can become all-knowing and all-present, you know, through social media. I can be everywhere at the same time. It's this same desire that is written into the book of Genesis. It still plays out in our hearts today. We hate the fact that we are human. You go to the beginning of the gospel and you see something very strange. Not only does God become human, born into poverty, weakness, helplessness, and then persecuted, having to flee for his own life. But all that happens when he's a child. He didn't really have a say in the matter. Then you see when Jesus is just about to begin his ministry, he goes into the desert for 40 days, intentionally fasting, intentionally choosing to be hungry. And even there, he starts to experience this grand temptation. The devil comes and tempts him that he can now be the ruler of all the world, that he can throw himself off a tower and not be hurt, that he can turn a stone into bread. Jesus goes the opposite direction. The one person in the world who actually has the power to do these things, because he is divine, he chooses to be human. He chooses to be hungry, vulnerable, helpless. So we have spent all of our human history running away from our humanity, and Christ now comes into the world and actually walks towards it, willingly embraces it. That's the beginning of his mission. At the end of his mission, once again, he walks even deeper into the cross, allows himself to be scourged, beaten, rejected, spat upon, killed. This is God's answer to the question. Where all of human history has been filled with this question of why are we hurting, why are we suffering, God presents his word, his answer in Jesus Christ. The problem is that we just haven't stopped and listened to it. Because it's not the simplistic answer we're looking for. It's not the nice, simple, I'll click my fingers and make it go away. He's actually calling us to return to an understanding of who we are. That somehow suffering is intimately tied up with being human. that particularly tied up with being people who love. You cannot love without suffering. You cannot have freedom without suffering. What we find is that this is going to become more and more the great contrast between the Christian view of the world and the secular view of the world. As I said, in recent centuries, some of the great philosophers declared that suffering was meaningless. Because there is no God, it's all this grand injustice, we exist purely by chance, therefore suffering is just meaningless. And so we have every right to avoid it at every cost, even if that cost is inflicting pain on other people. And so we end up with quite a terrible situation where for those who have the wealth and the power, we can live quite a comfortable life. And yet often we just end up turning a blind eye to the fact that many others are suffering as a result. Everybody starts looking after themselves. Everyone starts turning inwards, this grand selfishness. But there's another thing which is possibly even worse, that if suffering becomes meaningless, we also find that joy becomes meaningless. Because if this world is, if our life is purely random chance, then everything is purely random chance. Nothing has meaning, even the good things. So everything now just becomes absolutely nonsense. Like it's just complete meaningless mess. And this is where our world's going. Our world now becomes this desperate pursuit of pleasure, and yet we never actually find joy. Everyone's desperately trying to find happiness. I need to feel something. If I don't feel, it's not real. And we end up just in this kind of numb state, desperately trying to feel something, but we can never actually be satisfied by it. We can never grab hold of it and delight in it anymore. This is a point where Christianity needs to step up and really start proclaiming something beautiful. We need to start proclaiming an alternative story that suffering actually does have meaning, because in the midst of that, we find that we're loved. That we find that Christ is intimately close to us because he shares that pain. As we read in the second reading, we have a high priest, we have Jesus, we have a God who is capable of feeling our weaknesses with us. Everything that we experience, he has experienced. This is the ultimate act of solidarity. And so if we actually acknowledge that, everything is changed, everything is transformed. You know, we don't quite understand this because, once again, we're a world that only understands happiness. Happiness is about a feeling, it's about what you have. But joy is about being loved. If you know deep within yourself that you are not alone and that you are loved, everything becomes a moment of joy. So this is why the great saints, who often suffered terribly, for some reason were able to do it with a smile on their faces, because they realized how close Christ was to them at the time. They knew that they were intimately embraced even when their bodies were falling apart. Yeah, there's a great saint, one of the Lebanese saints, Saint Rafka, suffered unbelievably. You know, to the point where almost every joint in her body dislocated. She became blind because doctors were treating her so badly. I won't say exactly what happened, because you probably will feel a bit queasy in the stomach. But unbelievable pain. You know, the only part of her body that she could still use was her fingers. And she used that to knit, to make her, you know, make things for other sisters. But in this convent of nuns, she was the happiest nun in the whole place. And the other nuns would go to her to cheer themselves up. But this is the mystery that she discovered. And I think this is the mystery we're all being invited into. To stop focusing on the surface level, on that pure surface level of how do I feel, and start focusing on, am I actually loved? Is Christ in the midst of this? Can I find him in the midst of this, loving me, standing with me, caring for me deeply? At that point, the suffering doesn't go away, but you actually start to discover a joy that is beyond belief. This is what Christianity needs to bring to our world. You know, a world that has forgotten this. It cannot begin to understand it. For us to really know what the cross means, to really start meditating deeply upon what Jesus did upon the cross. Why would God freely choose to suffer so horribly with us? Allow that to start to change our worldview, our perspective. That becomes our proclamation. You know, we don't need to go out and start proclaiming doctrines and dogmas and theological ideas. We just need to start showing people that you can find Christ, you can find love, even in that darkest place in your life. You know, in a world that's ravaged by depression, you know, people desperately trying every possible way to eradicate pain, taking painkillers, antidepressants, you know, dosing themselves with everything. We've got the answer. But sadly, we haven't bothered to actually look at it ourselves. So I think if there's one thing the readings today are calling us to is look deeply at the cross. Meditate deeply. Wrestle with that mystery. Don't settle for any simplistic answers. Go deeply into this mystery of what Jesus is doing. But also start to enter into the mystery of your own humanity. And ask God the question of why is it that our weakness, our helplessness, our frailty is possibly the greatest blessing in our life? As Jesus walked into the desert to find that place, allow him to lead you also into that place of discovery, that you could find some meaning in the midst of all the mystery.